As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Tuesday, July 12th. Derek Van Riper here with Al Melchior on this episode. We'll take a look at some recent debuts and promotions. We'll take a look at a few prospect-related injuries and other level changes. And with the Futures game coming up as part of the All-Star festivities that get underway in Los Angeles this weekend, we're going to take a look at some hitters and pitchers of interest that were selected to play in that game. So a bit of a deviation from the norm as we skip the level roundup for 1 week. We'll resume that, of course, on next week's show, unless we get so immersed in Futures game recap talk that it has to be pushed back again. But we begin, as we begin every week on this show, with the debuts and promotions. Brian Bello was promoted last week. He has pitched twice, including his most recent opportunity to make a start. That was Monday night, last night against the Rays. And it just seems like looking at Bayo's first two starts, Al, and looking at some of the things that are in the scouting reports about him and scouting grades, you can see it right on the top of the Fangraphs page. The long-term issue for Brian Bello is going to be command. If he commands his stuff well, he's going to be a pretty good big league starter. If he doesn't, he's one of those guys that eventually probably ends up in the bullpen, likely in a high leverage role, but there's a lot still hanging on the balance here for a guy that looked really good in the upper levels in the minor leagues and looked a little bit over his head in his first couple starts in the big leagues so far.
Which isn't all that unusual, and I don't know that it necessarily disqualifies him from being useful in fantasy or to the Red Sox. It's, you know, for some stretch the rest of the season. In a way, maybe it unfairly puts him at a disadvantage because he hasn't really taken advantage through these first two starts to make a case for him to stay in the rotation long term. But I had a couple of observations or thoughts about Bello after these starts. And one is that we've talked about him on several episodes throughout the season. I don't recall the issue of his walk rate ever coming up. And I think that's because when we do talk about control and we talk about walk rate for prospects, it's got to be like a 12, 13, 14% walk rate. And that raises the alarm for us. His was a little bit lower than that, but still like around both a double A and a triple A in the neighborhood of a 10% walk rate. And when you factor in the higher degree of difficulty of the major leagues, then you could see that could be a problem for Bello. So that was one thing that I realized, at least I think I underestimated before his promotion. The other thing is, and again, obviously extremely small samples that we're talking about after two starts, but when you are talking about just two starts worth of innings, it makes sense to go a little bit more granular and go down into the, you know, pitch by pitch metrics. And there's some encouraging things there. His zone contact rate in these two starts, 81.8%. That's really good. Where the walks have become an issue is, you know, obviously that he's not throwing in the zone enough, but also that when he is throwing out of the zone, a lot of contact being made there, 76.9%, which is extremely high. But not a lot of really dangerous contact being made. No barrels yet on 28 batted balls. And that's, I think that's a large enough collection of batted balls where you could say, okay, maybe there's a little something here. And we see this a lot with pitchers that walk a lot of batters, that when they get hit, they, you know, they may clog up the bases with walks and singles, and that gets them into trouble, makes them a threat for whip, but they won't necessarily have a high ERA. So again, it's a little bit of a stretch here with the number of innings that Bayo has thrown, but there is some good, I think, to be seen there.
Yeah, and looking at the pitch mix, it's four-seamer, sinker, changeup, and slider. He gets a lot of drop on that sinker. It looks like a really nice pitch for him. I think having two fastballs can make you a lot less prone to hard contact because hitters have to guess on the fastball which fastball it is, but then you also have that nasty changeup and you've got that slider as well as ways to get some swings and misses. So there's possibly two good whiff pitches and then two good fastballs that he could work with. So if you told me you have to make a decision today, which outcome is it? Does he become a good starter or does he end up in the pen? I would actually be more inclined to bet on him making it as a starter because of that pitch mix depth. I think there's enough in that arsenal where it can work, even if the command ends up being more average in the long run, right? If he's not an above average command guy, it might not matter because of what he has at his disposal. Plenty of velocity in there as well. I think where we get stuck in fantasy for this season is I don't think there's a regular spot for him. I think this is the result of a lot of injuries right now. He could probably be a bridge guy from starter to late innings in the shorter term. If they want to use him as a multi-inning reliever, that could be a better way to chew up some innings and at least make sure they're getting big league value out of Bayo for most of the second half. And then we could be talking about him as someone that maybe in draft season for 2023 is competing for one of the last spots in the rotation. And at that spot, maybe he'd be a very interesting flyer in the pick 300 to pick 350 range. Like that's the sort of arc that I think we could see from Bayo right now. But I do think it's difficult to hold him in most fantasy leagues, most redraft fantasy leagues throughout the second half of the season based on how things look at the present time with that role. That's one of the bigger issues here as we try and figure out what's next for him. A couple other recent debuts. Anderson Espinoza, that name might sound familiar because once upon a time he was a top 100 prospect. He has been slowed by multiple injuries. He actually made his debut with the Cubs over the weekend, pitched three innings, only gave up one earned run, a lot of hit, but a really nice debut for a guy that was working at Double A Tennessee earlier this season, pitching as a starter and had an ERA over 7 so far this season, Al. Really strange season for him so far. 54 Ks in 44 and a third innings at Double A. Home runs were a problem, 10 homers allowed, walks were a problem with the 25 walks. This is probably going to be just an extra arm for the Cubs. They're going to try and see what they can get out of him. But really, this is just a success story of someone who went basically 5 years between organized games as a result of the pandemic and just a long series of arm injuries.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really cool to see him get to the majors. That said, you mentioned the walks, and that's the kind of walk rate that I was alluding to before. Almost a 13% walk rate at Double A this year. So again, if you drill down to the pitch by pitch peripherals, not really much there to be encouraged by for Espinoza. So I don't really see a role for him that's going to be fantasy relevant in the short term and long term. I'd like to see him go back to Double A or go to Triple A and get that walk rate down. And then I think Espinoza would be somebody that I'd be more interested in.
And one thing I should clarify, he came back up and pitched again over the weekend, actually debuted in late May. I just missed it back at that time. I was looking at the ESPN recent debuts page and saw that he had come up. But I think some of those recent debuts pages that exist on a few different sites, they look back at a certain period of time. If they don't see a pitcher pitch like in the last 30 days or a hitter didn't hit in the last 30 days, they'll pop up a player on there. So sometimes you'll see names that are on there that are not actually debuts. They're just recent returnees from long absences. But this year was the big league debut of Anderson Espinoza. So I'm just kind of curious to see what happens with his innings in the second half. I mean, he could just be kind of a mop-up reliever for the Cubs, but it'd be nice to see if the stuff comes back around, if he can start to iron out some of those control issues and maybe compete for a spot in 2023. The other big promotion was Nolan Jones getting a chance with Cleveland. And I think with Nolan Jones, we talked about him a bit on Friday's episode as a possible waiver wire pickup. There's some swing and miss in his profile, and there always has been, but this year at AAA, the brief time he spent there, he actually improved on the mark that he showed a year ago with the strikeout rate. He was 30% a year ago, just about 27% this season. And I think there's always been patience. So you look at him as a patient hitter with some power, a little bit of speed. Cleveland has that need in the corner outfield. It's been there for what feels like 5 years now. They've had a spot that is kind of up for grabs, and maybe Nolan Jones can lock that spot down. He was battling a few injuries at AAA this year. It's why he's only played in 23 games at that level before this promotion. So where are you at with the expectations for Jones, who already has popped his first big league homer, by the way?
Yeah. And in a very limited sample, hitting the ball in the air, which is something that he didn't do at AAA this year. So there, like you said, there is power there, but he's got to not hit so many grounders, and it will take a bit of time to see if that's something that he actually improves upon at the major league level. I mean, if he does, I think that there's 12 team potential for Jones, because there is definitely a path to everyday playing time for him. But as of right now, I'm not really interested in 12 teamers. I do want to see if that power translates to the major leagues, and there's more appeal in OBP and points leagues because of that patient profile that you talked about. But otherwise, I'm not sure there's enough there that really elevates him to status as an outfielder in a 12-team league.
Yeah, there's another name in Cleveland that I think we might see at some point this season, another blast from the past type name. Will Benson, the first-round pick, 14th overall in the 2016 draft. He's been going level to level in Cleveland's minor league system and not really living up to the expectations of a first-round pick until this season. Everything seems to be clicking for him at AAA Columbus this year. Will Benson has lowered his strikeout rate to a career-best 22.7% at the highest minor league level that he's played at. He's walking over 20% of the time. He's already popped 14 homers, and he's got 14 steals in 16 attempts as well.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's get to a few injury items from the minor league ranks. Jack Leiter, who was missing some time at AA for the Rangers, is back in action. And I thought at one point back in the early part of draft season, draft and hold season, we're talking December 2021, I thought at that point Jack Leiter was actually a pretty good stash for this year. His season at AA has not backed that up whatsoever. It's only been 50 innings so far, 14 appearances, 13 of them starts. Jack Leiter has a 6.30 ERA and a 1.60 WHIP this season. So I don't think we're going to see Jack Leiter until probably the early part of 2023 at the very soonest. And that would be with a good second half, kind of laying the groundwork for an early look at AAA. And then he'd have to dominate at AAA for a handful of starts at a minimum before the Rangers could actually think about bringing him up to the big league level. Big surprise for me is the walk rate. I did not think Jack Leiter was going to have issues with walks. He's walked 12.7% of the batters that he's faced so far at the AA level.
Well, I think there's maybe a way that you can parse his season that might be actionable. A lot of those walks have come more recently. In his last 21 innings, he has struck out 26 batters, but 18 walks. So almost a walk per inning over his last 21 innings. Before that, the 29 innings that he pitched to start the season, 36 strikeouts, so still a good strikeout rate then. Only 12 walks over the first 29 innings. So given that he did just recently miss a start with arm fatigue, again, this is maybe really stretching and speculating way too much. Maybe there has been an issue of you know, gradual fatigue with him. Now, he did get hammered in his most recent start, so that might not hold up so well as an explanation, but I think it's interesting to watch, and I would consider trying to buy low on Leiter because of how skewed that walk rate is.
Yeah, I mean, the polish that he had coming out of Vanderbilt made it seem like he'd be a fast mover, and he still could be. Maybe the arm fatigue is a big factor here that has caused him to just be a lot less effective than we expect him to be at AA Frisco so far this season. But I think you're right. I mean, it's a window to get him at a pretty significant discount. I think if you have someone who ranks prospects mid-season, they might not have him firmly inside the top 100 right now, which would have been the case just a few months ago before the season began. Henry Davis is back on the IL at AA. He's got a wrist injury right now. A couple of injuries have been an issue for Davis this year. He's been pretty productive overall around them, though. Not at the AA level, but the high A numbers were fantastic. We talked about him, I think, at the time that he's promoted. 341, 450, 585 at high A. Clearly too good for that level. And it's really hard to read into what he's done since being promoted because of the IL stints. Now, I think with Davis, it's a little bit like Leiter, where we had expectations of being a really fast mover as, first off, the number one overall pick, but also someone who played and it was really good in college. Probably looking at this time next year, or June of next year, as the earliest possible outcome just because of the time that he's losing to injuries. And given that it's a wrist injury, and for a hitter especially, you want those things to be completely healed. The Pirates may slow play his recovery just a little bit. Not an injury, but an absence to throw out there nonetheless. Khalil Watson hasn't played since July 1st for disciplinary reasons. Not much out there yet as far as when they expect him to be back in the lineup. Maybe as the second half of the minor league season begins, that's about the time we'll see Khalil Watson back in game situations. A few other items of note and level changes. Corbin Carroll up to AAA. Is it going to happen this year, Al, or is Corbin Carroll going to be among the first players to get promoted when we flip the calendar to 2023?
I mean, my expectation is that probably we'd see Carroll debut next year, maybe on opening day. And that's just based on comments that I've been reading from Diamondbacks officials. But I think we all know that, you know, we should take those with a little bit of a grain. Maybe he could be up later this year. I wouldn't completely rule it out, but we had actually had a conversation with Zach Buchanan. I think it was on last Thursday's show. And we talked about Dominic Fletcher and some other outfield options. And it is a bit of a crowded situation, even if they do trade David Peralta before the deadline. So again, I'm just, for those reasons, I'm leaning away from expecting to see Carroll this year.
Yeah, I've been playing it that way so far too. I'd be excited if he did get the opportunity, but I just think they're going to wait until next year to start the clock. They're going to let him tear up AAA Reno and put up video game numbers in the PCL for a few months, and then we'll get the heavy calls for Carroll to be an opening day fixture for the D-backs. But I think with the new rules and the way things played out this year with prospect promotions, I think there is a very good chance that we'd actually see that sort of arc for Corbin Carroll. Von Grisham in the Atlanta system moved up to AA, so a nice bump for him. I love seeing what players do in a half season at AA, especially after things go really well at the high A level. And that was the case for Grisham. 74 games, 11 homers. He was 20 for 24 as a base stealer with a 312, 404, 487 line. Nice plate skills as well. I mean, not really any major issues making contact. Good patience. Just looks like a really good all-around prospect. And in AA, I think it's going to tell us a lot more about what kind of ceiling he has and how much longer it might be before Atlanta can start to find a way to figure out how he fits on their big league roster.
Yeah, it really will tell us a lot. And if he does well, if he puts up similar numbers at AA, I think he could be somebody that we'd be thinking about drafting and stashing next year, which was not something I would have expected just a couple of months ago. So will be fun to watch over the second half.
Yeah, big move up a lot of prospect lists coming for Von Grisham where it hasn't happened already. A few prospects that got sent down. Two pitchers that I think are purely workload management, George Kirby and Rowanzi Contreras. I think we're just looking at a case where both the Mariners and the Pirates want to keep those innings in check, and using the All-Star break to do that and optioning those guys down to bring up an extra reliever is a way to leave the big league club from being without enough innings available. And Vidal Brujan in a different situation, really just becoming more of an up and down guy for the 2022 Rays. And I think of players that I liked at the beginning of the season, Vidal Brujan has probably fallen as much as any young player for me, just in terms of my expectations. And if he gets traded, then I think I will have an opportunity to press the reset button and start to buy in again. But I think so long as he remains with the Rays, I'm just not confident he's going to play enough to become valuable for us outside of maybe AL-only leagues at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I think a move out of the organization could only help because there's such a logjam. And the fact that he's down when Wander Franco is also on the IL is something that makes me a little concerned about Brujan's future in the organization, or at least his opportunities for playing time. And on the other hand, we got Jonathan Aranda, who is back up. He's a player that you've brought up once or twice on previous episodes. And I wonder if it's worth reading something into that and also seeing that maybe there is an opportunity for some pretty steady playing time while Franco is out.
Yeah, I think if I had to put myself in the position of the Rays front office, I think it's probably just more faith in Aranda as a hitter. You know, I think without Wander, what do you need if you're the Rays? You got Taylor Walls, who's a very good defensive shortstop, who on many other teams would just be the starting shortstop because of his glove. Because they have Wander, they move Walls around and use him more like a super utility guy. But if you're trying to keep pace with what you thought your run production was going to look like with a healthy Wander, you just want the guy who hits more. And I think Aranda hits the ball harder than Brujan. I think that's one of the main concerns I have about Vidal Brujan in the long run, is he doesn't hit the ball very hard. So he's going to be very dependent upon using the entire field, taking his share of walks, doing some damage on the base paths, which, again, all those things are still possible for him. But if he doesn't fit the needs that they have in Tampa Bay, playing time is going to lag. With Aranda, I just wonder, are we talking about a big side platoon role with all the mixing and matching they do? He's a left-handed hitter, really doesn't have much left to prove in the minors. I mean, the numbers at Durham again this year, 330, 403, 546, pretty much the same slash line that he had finishing last season at Double A in a similar number of games. So you're talking about 20 plus home run power and a guy that has hit for really high averages in the upper levels of the minors. I'm just kind of fascinated to see what they do with his playing time, how they get him into their defensive alignment, and what he can actually do against top level pitching.
I'm interested too. And I'm especially interested in the playing time for points leagues, because he does have this profile as a line drive hitter who, as you alluded to, he has some home run power, but also has some doubles power. And if he plays enough and can compile enough counting stats in a points league, I think he could have a little bit of extra value there, but it obviously would be reliant on him playing pretty regularly. So, you know, fortunately, we've got him up in pretty early in the week here, so we can see how this pans out heading into the weekend fab.
Yeah, I'm looking at the hit location numbers on his RotoWire page, and it's really almost an even distribution for Aranda between pulled balls, balls hit up the middle, and balls hit the opposite way, which is really nice to see. It just gives you a lot more confidence than you might have in a typical lefty bat coming up and hopefully getting prolonged exposure to big league pitching for the first time. Let's get to a few trending players. And there's a bit of a theme here. The trending players largely are players who are going to be part of the futures game, as I mentioned earlier. I'm wondering if we're going to see Shea Langeliers at some point in the second half. Al, we already saw the A's make one trade, flipping Christian Bethencourt to the Rays, giving them another versatile piece, a player that's hitting the ball hard and actually playing a lot better than I expected. But with Langeliers, you know, you could theoretically bring him up even if you don't trade Sean Murphy. But I'm wondering if, from a playing time perspective and from a development perspective, if the A's have to clear Sean Murphy at the trade deadline to actually give a spot to Langeliers in August and September.
Well, we saw a kind of a similar situation in Kansas City with MJ Melendez. That's worked out. Well, it was working out even before Perez went on the IL. So I don't know that necessarily we need a Sean Murphy trade for Langeliers to be called up. The thing that kind of surprised me, because I keep thinking that this is a crowded catching situation, and I thought at some point Austin Allen might be the catcher of the future. I was surprised to see he's 28 already. So he's not going to be blocking Langeliers. So just, you know, one other small point, I think, in the favor of maybe expecting to see Langoliers up at some point in 2022.
Yeah, and I'm wondering too, like, how serious are they about playing him at other positions? If you take a look at the minor league numbers so far this season, Langoliers has played all year at AAA Las Vegas, 71 games played, 59 games behind the plate, 12 as the DH. So they haven't really messed with him in the outfield. They haven't tried him out at first base or anything like that. He played a little bit of first base way back in college during his time at Baylor, played a couple games in left field at Baylor. I don't think that necessarily means they'd throw him out there at the big league level. That being said, the A's are so incredibly bad right now that I don't think it matters. Like, if they think he can play any position without getting hurt, maybe in that case they'd say, well, winning does not matter at all to us right now. In fact, losing is exactly what we want. So let's just bring this guy up and let him hit big league pitching. But that lack of defensive versatility basically means it's a catcher DH combo for two young guys. And I'm not sure any team, even the A's, wants to take development time away from a future catcher by spreading the playing time around that way. Jackson Churio in the Brewers organization, who I think in the evaluation of a lot of scouts who are watching the Carolina League is the most improved or most impressive player at that level so far this season, is beginning to creep up in terms of how much he's rostered in some of the deeper dynasty leagues out there. He's among the big movers on in-season prospect lists as well, only 7% rostered on CBS, and far, far away from the big leagues, to be completely clear. I did see a leaderboard snapshot of what Churio has done WRC plus wise at low A compared to a lot of the other top prospects that have come through in recent years. I know Ronald Acuna Jr. was on that list. Wander was on that list, and it was sorted by WRC plus, which I love. And Churio was number one on that list. And I think that's great. If you're a Brewers fan, you have Churio in a keeper dynasty league, you could only be excited about that. But there was one number on that same snapshot that had me a little bit concerned, and it was the strikeout rate. Mm-hmm. And compared to the other elite prospects that he has outperformed at that level so far, again, he's 18 years old at low A, so this is almost picking nits at this point. A 28.2% K rate at low A, regardless of your age, is something that's worth monitoring. I'm not saying throw a bucket of cold water on Churio's amazing first half. I'm just saying that's the one thing that's pretty clearly different about him compared to the other, you know, phenoms that have come through that level and played at a similarly high level of total offensive production.
Yeah, that also stuck out to me too on Churio's stat line. And so, of course, when you have that kind of WRC plus, you have the 320 batting average that he's carrying, then you know that he's getting a lot of hits on balls in play, 415 BABIP this year. And I wish we had a better way to judge that in terms of major league equivalency. But obviously, any kind of BABIP that's in the neighborhood of 400, much less 15 points above it, is a cause for some skepticism.
Yeah, a lot of pulled balls so far this season. Again, I'm not here to tell you that Jackson Churio isn't amazing or that he's not a fun prospect or that you shouldn't have him keep her in dynasty leagues and be happy about it. More just calling attention to what could be a problem as he advances. I'm very curious to see what his assignment turns out to be in the second half. They want to aggressively promote him up to Appleton, give him half a season at high A or almost half a season at high A, and just see how things fare for him against another level up of competition. One pitcher that I thought was interesting is a trending player, and I think the first time I've heard him mentioned on a pod this season was actually Eno bringing him up on Rates and Barrels on Monday. Max Castillo in the Blue Jays organization, getting some chances at the big league level right now. A bit of an interesting player just because we've seen Jose Berríos struggle. We've seen the Jays, because of injuries, need to turn to their depth. I think for a long time we've expected Nate Pearson to be that next young starter up. And I'm beginning to wonder if Max Castillo is not actually that sort of bridge guy. Maybe it's a little bit like the Brian Bello situation where there's not one regular spot he can call his own in the rotation right now. Similar flaws in terms of what's happened in the upper levels of the minor leagues. You know, walk rate right around 10%, actually a little above that at AA. Really good ratios, missing plenty of bats. So I'm just curious what your interest level is in Max Castillo. Is he the kind of guy that in a keeper in a dynasty league you're trying to pick up and stash right now just because there could be an opportunity down the road, even if the opportunities right now are a little bit spread out?
Well, I think the way that you described a situation that he's probably going to get, he's already made one start. He's probably going to get some starts. It's just a question of how regularly, if he can really become a part of this Blue Jays rotation. And you mentioned the walk rates in the minor leagues. The strikeout rates have been good, but not great. But, and as you know, same caveat we've used with several other pitching prospects that we've discussed here, very, very small sample of major league innings, but a 28.9% CSW, which is pretty good. So even if from the minor league numbers, it looks like maybe he's just got merely decent strikeout potential in the major leagues, that's a very encouraging indicator there. So with that said, I would definitely be interested in adding Castillo right now to 15 teamers. And anything that's shallower, I think it's just a watch list, just a wait and see situation for him.
Yeah, maybe in a first come, first serve league, if a good matchup came up, you could pick him up, throw him in there as a streamer, and then probably drop him in some of the more shallow leagues. But I think you're right. 15 teams is probably the threshold for even considering holding on to him. And I think the opportunity right now hinges on the health of Yusei Kikuchi. Kikuchi on the IL with a neck strain. But it sounds like the kind of injury that with the time off around the All-Star break and then resetting the rotation, maybe Kikuchi is ready the first time through the Jays rotation as they begin the second half.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get to a few more players of interest. We'll focus on some hitters here. The Futures Game rosters came out recently, and I want to talk about Zach Veen, the outfielder in the Rockies organization. Strikeout rate has improved with the move up against high A pitching this season. He's still drawing a lot of walks. He's showing the equivalent of 20 home run pop, and he's now 35 for 37 as a base stealer. This looks like a first round pick gone very right for the Rockies.
It does. It does. Yeah. A lot of walks, just filling up the stat line, from front to back. So, just another player to keep an eye on, maybe gets to double A this year. But whenever he does, see how that translates as he moves closer to Colorado.
I know last year, some of that power he was showing came in some very hitter-friendly environments. Fresno, I think, is where he played his home games last year. The power this year, at least, kind of gives you a little more confidence that that is, in fact, real. The slugging percentage is down compared to where it was last year, but I think Spokane is not one of those extreme hitter environments that you can find sometimes in the minor leagues, if my memory serves me correctly. It used to be a short season affiliate a long time ago, so not an environment that gets a lot of attention. But, geez, anybody who can get on base like that, show a little bit of power, and steal bases at that clip with that sort of efficiency is going to be a highly coveted prospect. So nice to see him having that success with that bump up, and maybe a guy that could see double A at some point before season's end. Pete Crow Armstrong, another former first rounder, showing a little more pop this year. And, you know, he's not walking as much after a recent promotion, but I think the sample's so small you can't really read into that just yet. And with Crow Armstrong, he's a great defender in center field. I think the question when he was drafted was, is he going to hit enough to be more than a bottom third of the order hitter who's basically in the lineup because of his plus defense?
And one thing to consider, too, with the numbers that he's putting up and going to put up in high A, that he is still just 20. So, so far, pretty much a league average hitter, but doing it as a 20-year-old. So, like you said, the pop that he's shown so far is encouraging. And anything that's better than this is really gravy.
So Veen and Crow Armstrong are the same age. If you were able to choose between the two, like you're making a trade or maybe you're doing a draft from scratch in a long-term league, which of those profiles do you like better if you're choosing between the two today?
I think Veen, and also just because, assuming he doesn't get traded, he lands at Coors Field. So I think that gives him the edge.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same side as you with this one. I'm just looking at all the ways it can go right for Zach Veen with that offensive profile. I think that's the thing that makes the difference for me. More outs almost for him in a good way to just be a very good fantasy player in the long run. Oscar Colas in the White Sox organization, I think, deserves a mention here. He's a little bit old for the futures game, considering the level he's playing at high A so far this season. But it's really his first professional game action since the start of the pandemic. Colas played for a little while in Japan professionally. And just given his long and meandering road to even get into the White Sox system, I'm not going to hold the age to level against him. 311, 369, 475 for the slash line. K rate right around 20%. He's been almost 30% better than league average. And I think of the players we've talked about so far, I mean, between Churio and Veen and Crow Armstrong, I'm looking at Colas, and I think he's the guy that I think most needs to see another level of competition this year. Like, you could justify keeping all those other younger guys at their current levels the rest of the season, and it would make sense. But I think the White Sox need to give Colas a look at AA in the second half to see how he fares against that level.
Yeah, it would make sense, given that he's been well above average at high A and won't be too old for AA. Won't be too young, rather. I think that's a move that would make a lot of sense.
One other name that's really interesting is in the Guardians organization, Jonkenzie Noel. He's 6'3", 250. He's 20 years old. As you can imagine, 6'3", 250, power is probably the carrying tool, and that is correct. That is exactly what the carrying tool is. Began the season at high A, which is where he finished a year ago. Hit 219 with a 286 OBP and a 509 slugging percentage. Got bumped up to AA. He's playing at AA right now. And I think this could actually work in the long run, even though it's a weird sort of profile right now. I just think he's so young for AA. They clearly see something in him that makes you think that maybe we're talking about another Miguel Sano type profile, right? I mean, that's a fun player to have eventually, even if there are limitations for a player like that. And I'm curious if you ever target players like this in your long-term leagues, because it is a strange bet when you're talking about maybe a below-average hit tool, someone that doesn't run well, and maybe even someone that doesn't necessarily field any position well enough to be considered even an average defender.
Well, the answer I can say definitively is no, because when I saw what Noel was doing at high A as a 20-year-old, I went and looked for him in my leagues and just ultimately decided that roster space was going to be better used on somebody else with the profile at high A 31.7% strikeout rate. And that power, just the ridiculous power that he showed there, a 52.7% fly ball rate. So with all the strikeouts and all the fly balls and all the high fly balls, it really just laid waste to his batting average. And he's, at least as far as the batted ball profile goes, he's actually been even more extreme since getting to AA, even though he's cut the strikeouts back considerably. So really intriguing, because if he does keep that strikeout rate down close to where it is now, 21.8%, and he's walking more too, after the level jump, that's pretty darn interesting. So yeah, I was surprised that he got promoted with that profile to AA, and he'd be a fun player to roster, and I'd like to have a reason to roster him. So I think if he keeps the strikeout rate down, that would be a good reason.
Yeah, I just think for someone this young to be at this level, I'm more willing to roster Noel than I would be a player that's 2 or 3 years older with the same profile at this level, just because I think there's still that outside chance that he could start making better swing decisions. He could start controlling the strike zone a bit better, and that would at least bring up the batting average floor. I think the power is already so obvious, you don't need to increase that to make him interesting. But if you can increase the walk rate too, his real-life value goes up to the point where he becomes a middle-of-the-order offensive player without question, a guy that you actually want to have in the lineup every day because it's a 330, 340 OBP, or maybe even better than that, with just massive power. Like that, it's kind of like the function of Franmil Reyes in the Guardians lineup right now, or the function that Franmil Reyes is supposed to have when things are going well.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of player I think we're looking at, and that could be pretty exciting if the K rate stays as low as it's been at AA so far. Very early, though, so we'll have to see where that goes over the course of the second half. There are some interesting pitchers, of course, in the Futures game as well. Let's start with Hunter Brown, who is really doing a good job at AAA this season in the Astros organization. He's cut his home run rate down a bit, and he's pushed his K rate back to previous marks. When he first reached AAA last year, the K rate came down. This looks like just another really good young pitcher coming through for the Astros, and maybe it's kind of a wait-your-turn scenario for Hunter Brown, Al, where you know Brian Abreu's currently in the old Christian Javier role, where he's the guy in the bullpen you look at and say, that guy might be able to start if an opportunity opens up, and now Brown is just kind of waiting for his chance to at least move into a relief role for the Astros in the short term, even though he looks every bit like a good starter in the long term.
Yeah, it just seems like that's a long wait to be in that line with the Astros, but that does seem to be the path that he's on. And if I was going to, with hindsight, kind of raise the alarm with Brian Baio in terms of a not great walk rate, Brown is right in that same neighborhood, 11% walk rate in AAA last time around when the strikeouts were lower. The walk rate was a little bit lower too, but right around 10%. So that's also just something to bear in mind so that we don't maybe get a little too enthusiastic about Hunter Brown when he reaches the majors.
Yeah, I think the Baio comp is kind of interesting because the walk rate, as you point out, is definitely a concern for Brown. It's going in the right direction, but even with improvement, we're still kind of sitting right around that 10% mark that can give us some pause. But I think just like Baio, you're talking about a pitcher that has a pretty deep arsenal. And if you want a reason to believe in someone with shaky command, the depth of the arsenal is often the thing that can kind of tip you back into believing someone could be a starter. We've got Wilmer Flores from the Tigers organization coming up to be a part of the Futures game. And look, it's the standard confusion. We've got a handful of players in the big leagues with a common name. Wilmer Flores, at least it's not another Wilmer Flores in the infield. It's a Wilmer Flores pitching, which is great. K rate's been great so far at AA. He's only 21 years old. It's amazing. Wilmer Flores turned 21 in the middle of February. He's got a K rate close to 30%. A walk rate under 5%. So the ratios are fantastic. Tigers, of course, managing his innings pretty carefully. I think last season he had a combined 66 innings pitched. So for this season, he's already at 58 and two-thirds. I imagine they get him close to 100 or 110 and then start to back off him at some point in the second half. But really a huge mover among pitching prospects this year and a nice development story in the Tigers organization.
Yeah, and he has brought the walk rate way down. So that was really encouraging to see. And yeah, suddenly the Tigers have this backlog of really intriguing pitching prospects. Reese Olson is somebody that we've talked about on a few episodes as well. So granted, some of their younger pitchers have been banged up this year. But Flores, the way he's pitching, there ought to be a spot for him maybe as early as sometime next year.
Yeah, I could definitely see that given some of the injuries that have piled up on the Tigers as well. Ricky Tiedman in the Blue Jays organization is the youngest pitcher on the AL team for the Futures game. Yuri Perez on the NL side is the only pitcher younger on the two rosters. Tiedman's a 19-year-old lefty with excellent command. We don't really see a lot of 19-year-olds on the left side with excellent command, so I think there's plenty of reason to be excited about him in the long run. Really curious to see what the Blue Jays do with Tiedman's workload this season as well. I feel like that's the common refrain when you're looking at these young pitchers in the Futures game. It's not where are they going to pitch in the second half. It's more of how much are they going to pitch in the second half.
Yeah, so that'll definitely be something to watch. And yeah, not somebody that we necessarily should even expect up next year. But like you said, for a lefty, really, really great profile. And definitely worth at least checking your dynasty waivers to see if he can be an add there.
Yeah, with a bump up from low A to high A already this season, Tiedemann's lowered the walk rate from 11.8% to 8%. K rate's down slightly, but still sitting at 36%. So great numbers so far from him in his first professional season. Tiedemann was a third-round pick of the Jays last summer. Bobby Miller is a guy that I think we could actually see maybe in the big leagues this season. It's something that Keith Law has at least kind of planted in my brain that maybe the Dodgers would want to use this electric arm kind of the way that a lot of contending teams do with some of their top prospects as a reliever first late in the year and then eventually back again as a starter. I think the only problem with Bobby Miller is that doesn't necessarily lead you to immediate redraft value, but it does become a fun thing to watch if the Dodgers give him a chance in the second half of the season. Compared to some of the other pitchers we're talking about, the ratios have not been quite as good at the AA level. A 4.12 ERA is pretty surprising for a guy whose underlying skills are actually really good. 1.17 whip on the season, 82 Ks in 67 and two-thirds innings. This is the kind of guy that can come up, though, and just be a seventh or eighth inning solution for the Dodgers right away if injuries, you know, pick apart their bullpen depth in the second half.
Yeah, like you said, that'd be a really fun thing to see. Not a lot of fantasy relevance there. But when I interviewed Keith Law back in March for a draft prep piece on prospects, and he singled out Miller as the prospect that he thought would have one of the biggest 2023 impacts as a rookie. So definitely something to keep on an eye on there in terms of his role. And you mentioned the ERA. I mean, that also seems to be a strand rate artifact. So the peripherals are pretty good for him, including a pretty good ground ball rate as well.
Yeah, I'm very much into Bobby Miller. I saw him make one appearance in spring training, and he just looked electric. So definitely there for the results getting a lot better for him, whether he stays at AA or gets tested at AAA in the second half. And of course, the Dodgers are using him like a regular starter so far, but the way they could possibly cap his innings is to move him to the pen late in the year. One other name to get to, Andrew Abbott in the Reds organization. Abbott started the year at high A, was posting video game numbers, had an ERA below one, had a whip below one, had 40 Ks in 27 innings, was doing a great job limiting free passes. They did bump him up to double A, and the ratios have gone sour in the time since then, but the peripherals still look pretty good. A K rate close to 30%, a walk rate at 8.6%. Home run rate hasn't been horrible, just below 1 per 9. This does look kind of similar to what you just said with Bobby Miller, where it seems like pretty bad luck with runners on base. And I don't want to assume that it's luck all the time, because you do have some guys that in situations with runners on base, they start tipping pitches, something's different, and they get hit in those scenarios. But I think Andrew Abbott, just a nice pop-up guy in the Reds organization from a fantasy perspective. Not a pop-up guy, he was a second-round pick, but I'm saying like someone that we weren't really looking at as a possible keeper or dynasty guy coming off of what he did in his brief debut last season, who is showing us some things that in deeper leagues at least might be worth stashing him for.
Yeah, and I think we do have to keep, like you said, the strand rate, the BABIP rate in perspective, because the peripherals have really held up for Abbott. And you know, you're talking about him as a, you know, using that word pop-up guy. I mean, his roster rate on CBS right now is just 2%. So he is definitely somebody that, because of those peripherals, is worth adding. And you could probably do that now in almost all of your dynasty leagues.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, Abbott was one of those guys that I know James Anderson has one of the deeper prospect lists that's out there over at RotoWire. I don't think Abbott was in his top 400 when the season began. So when I say pop-up prospect, I mean someone who wasn't a top 400 prospect. If you follow drafts and look at second round picks, obviously he's not a secret, but just a guy that we weren't thinking about for our purposes. And really curious to see what the second half brings for him. I would imagine he stays at double A. Innings wise, another puzzle. Only 13 competitive innings after signing last summer, but obviously had innings before that as well. So where they want to draw the lines for him, I don't know for sure, but could be another guy that early next season, if he's still pitching well in the upper levels of the minor leagues, pitches his way into contention for a spot in that Reds rotation. That is going to do it for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. You can give Al a follow on Twitter at AlMilkyOrBB. You can give me a follow at Derek Van Riper. Had a big prospect notebook that Al put out last week. If you'd like to check that out, plus anything else we have on the site, you can do that with a subscription for just $1 a month for the first 6 months at theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast. Get that offer while you can. Heck, if you're in there for fantasy baseball, maybe you like fantasy football too. The draft kit is already launched for this season, so you can start working on your fantasy football draft prep as well. That's going to do it for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're back with you on Wednesday with Under the Radar.